事情。
You know what? You know what? You know what? You know
what? The Sugar D-I-C D-A-D-I-E. That's just a title explaining who I be. Mr. L-A-W-N-G-E. I'll take a sucker from any feeling injury. Now that I've spelled it out and you like the way it sounds, I'm dissing rap music and whack music all the grounds. You say I'm full of shit and for that I give a pound. The Sugar Dick Daddy, Mr. Long, to break it down. Ladies, step to me for a real neat treat. And if you don't want to call me Long, you can call me Sweet Meat. I wear protection, you won't catch claps here. Come over later, but first go get a pap smear. 9.5, okay dear? And don't forget clean underwear. Cause I don't want the funk to flow. And after I nut, yo, you gotta go. Don't you know, ho? Don't you know, ho? Okay, enough is enough. Time to get that off my ladder and dig deep in the subject matter.
You know what?
You know what? Yes, I am. How are
good.
You?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Real good, Ladon. Real good.
Savvy? I am savvy. So, we are back again. I thought 88 was last week, so this be 89, bottom line. The Steve Smith Show. The Steve Smith edition. So, let's see. I guess, I watched a pay-per-view this week.
You watched a pay-per-view, yeah. And kind of a nonchalant pay-per-view, right?
You know, it was a feast or famine pay-per-view. The matches that were good were pretty darn good. The matches that were bad were atrocious.
Are we ready to do the moodies, or you want to just do them on the fly, or
I thought we were going to have to, like, do some discussion and some category making and stuff.
But you're good, man. You know, you're a good player, dude.
Well, I wasn't doing all this research like you were this week. You know, going back and watching the matches. I'd prefer to do it next week because
next week is Christmas. I'm gonna be in One Pismo Beach next week, starting on Saturday.
Till when?
Till Wednesday. And that's the night before Christmas, Kevin.
And all things. Well, we can do it after.
Okay, all right. So
we can go late, like late next week. I ain't doing jack. Give me time to watch the matches.
When do you have your basketball? You don't have any basketball practices next week.
Yeah, we got.
When? What days? You have it after Christmas, Friday.
Yeah, we can go. We can go for two weeks.
So are you doing it the day after Christmas?
Potentially, yeah. Well, I don't see why not.
Because I got the whole week off, dude.
Yeah.
So I can start playing?
Yeah, you're in.
I can show my skills over here?
Yeah, yeah. Wrap those ankles up and get out there.
Yeah, I got to buy some shoes.
Yeah.
I got to buy some motherfucking shoes, man. So we got... Whoa, hey. Easy there, dude. Easy.
You're full of sheep over here.
I am. I just like it, dude. You know?
You just lay this bed underneath it all the way like a... Like
when you see it? It. I can't do anything. It's going crazy, dude. It's like you will not switch tracks, dude.
Yeah, you know, it's telling you. It's saying, you
sucker.
Dumb fucker. Don't turn blue.
iTunes is going crazy.
I'm fucking you.
One of the best groups of all time that nobody knows about. Hold on a second. All right. There we go.
All right.
Enough of this unfoolishness or whatever it's called.
Time to get off down your ladder and dig deep into the subject matter.
Mr. Long, dude. One of the most underrated lyricists of all time, dude.
one of the greater DJs to get off behind the turntables.
He's a lot better than Pete Rocks.
Pete Rocks definitely was not wax.
He was definitely not wax.
I cannot say he was better than Pete Rocks on the mic.
But anyway,
I was a personal fan of Pete Rocks on the mic.
Oh, so was I.
Number one soul brother,
and then, you know, he'd start doing his... he'd be at the end of the song, and you just hear him in the background going, la, 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 la. Yeah, that album. So, So you hear all this stuff now, and, you know, we're not going to be one of these guys like, oh, you know, back when we were listening to rap, blah, 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 you know, all this stuff. But
I am, but...
But let's not do that.
Well, I'm not going to, but that's me.
Well, let's not do that right now.
Let's not get into that.
Mecca and the Soul Brother. Definitely anybody that wants to know what 1990s rap was all about. And this goes out to the producer, because he was forced to listen to it all the time in my car, in my Hyundai Sonata, which... I give the producer a lot of credit for being in the backseat of that car, because that was one crappy car. But Mecca and the Soul Brother, dude. If you want to know where Better Have My Donuts and Bad News Ramen were in the 90s, it's all about Mecca and the Soul Brother. So we're not doing the movies right now. I give out your Twitter handle. I give out my Twitter handle. I didn't see the TLC, but from what I don't really want to delve into that subject matter right now. Raw wasn't too bad, and then I think you saw NXT Revolution.
Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it, but I want to watch it.
Well, that was more like what I wanted to talk about was like the juxtaposition, if you will, of the Raw Revolution and the pay per view, because there was like a lot of kind of chatter like after that NXT show about how like the guys on the main roster wanted to kind of one up these guys and show them that they could put on a better show. And like, I'm not necessarily like, did they? You know, I think some people did and some people did not. I mean, it's not, I don't want to get any illusions like NXT show is great top to bottom. But the good matches on that show is a lot like the pay-per-view to me. The good matches on that NXT show were very good matches.
So the thing with NXT, what I'm kind of feeling what it is, and I still have yet to watch one, but kind of with the reading that I do, it kind of seems like it's more kind of like a main event type showcase where matches are long. You know, you can have more than one Divas match, and the storytelling is like a really type of old school type storytelling. To me, it kind of seems like a lot like a just from kind of hearing it and just seeing like little snippets here and there, it seems a lot to me kind of like an old NWA like TV broadcast. Am I right in saying that?
It'd be hard for me to say because I didn't really get to watch a lot of NWA broadcasts. But yeah, from what you're saying on the other points, yeah, the matches are longer.
Is it like main event? Because I used to like watching main event when it was on.
When it was on Sci-Fi or whatever channel. Yeah, I guess that's pretty accurate. Yeah, those matches, the matches that they're featuring will go a couple segments long, and they have plenty of time to tell a story. And that's part of what's good about NXT, right? It feels more like a wrestling show than sports entertainment, as Vinny Mac would like us to say. But the other thing that was kind of the question that comes into my mind again is like, with this whole thing about trying to one up that show and this and that, and a lot of like some of the talk was like that like the main roster guys feel like they're being hampered, which we kind of talked about on this show, but then they feel like the NXT guys are unhampered, and I gotta say, like, in a lot of ways I kind of get that feeling too. It's like there's a lot more like so Kevin Owens, the former Kevin Steen, he made his debut and
he turned on the former El Generico, right, to set up a feud like that.
At the end, but he had an opening match, right? And so his indie finisher was the Package Pile Driver, which is a pretty sick move. So I'm guessing maybe they're not letting him do Package Pile Driver there.
Because Pile Drivers were banned.
But he turned it into a package backbreaker, essentially, instead of dropping him on his head, dropped him to a knee, and then followed it up with like a pretty legitimate powerbomb. Which are things like you're not seeing like in WWE, and a lot of like a move like Generico has, right? He has this kind of I don't even know how to really describe it. It's like it's almost like a tilt-a-whirl spinning. I don't want to go all Mike Tenay, but it starts off kind of like a tilt-a-whirl spinning seated powerbomb, right? Mm-hmm. So he kind of gets him on his shoulder, spins, and then drops it into a seated powerbomb, which is a pretty sick move. And they get to do a lot of moves that are pretty innovative that I don't get to see on the main roster. And like, I'm kind of curious to see when these guys make it to the roster, are they going to keep the movesets they got, or are they going to say, well, you can't do that here anymore, and kind of like start pulling stuff away like they've done to Cesaro?
Well, that's the other thing too. Like, so with Rollins, when he was on the indie circuit, he had like a fall from grace, or it was like some crazy, like, he had a pretty sick, it wasn't a finisher, it was like a setup move or whatever it was, but he had a really nice finisher, but it's a really dangerous finisher. Mm-hmm. And you hardly ever see that now. But I mean, with Rollins, and I want to kind of get into Rollins.
I mean, Ambrose, if you look up our guy Suicidal Dragon, top 10 moves of Ambrose, or any of the other like kind of like compilations of his moveset, I mean, he's got a ton of crazy moves. Like, I think Chris Hero might have the best moveset of them all from just the clips that I've seen and the stuff that he pulls off of a bunch of, like, high impact kind of, like, power bombs, cutters, you know, things like that.
So I have a question for you. So, like, with Kevin Steen makes his debut, did you watch Kevin Steen with ROH? Because, I mean, you knew.
No.
But so how did you know about him?
Like,
just buzz?
Yeah, just buzz on Twitter and stuff like
that. So you've never really seen him, you saw him wrestle in that match.
Yeah.
What would you liken him to? Because I read the Masked Man on Grantland about, because he was saying that the best show was NXT Revolution. And it's kind of funny because usually, like, you know, we'll read the Masked Man and then that, you know, that gives us fodder to kind of sometimes to talk what we want to talk about. But we actually beat him by a week because we talked about NXT last week, so we're on the cutting edge. Don't give him the edge. Can't give him the edge.
All right, Ron.
But I mean, what did you kind of take away from him? Because I mean, I saw like some high packages between him and El Generico for the ROH title. It was a ladder match and stuff. And the only thing I really saw from Steen was that he just kept on throwing these like crazy clotheslines that always missed and didn't connect. And he seems like he's kind of like a high spot person, but he doesn't do the moves to kind of lead to that high spot. It just kind of like comes out of nowhere, you know. And I'm not taking that away from him or saying whatever it is, but I mean, what do you liken him to after watching one match of him? Because it's like the first impression is always kind of where you kind of direct where you're going to go with a certain wrestler.
So I mean, I guess physically he's kind of similar to Bray, right? In that, like, you know, he's kind of a big guy, not like you know,
not sure. Not like this,
right? Not like this, or not like
right, big guy.
Not right back, but like, you know, he's not cut. You know, he's not like, you know, he's a guy that's going to wrestle with the shirt on. But he's not slow. He's fast. He's athletic to where he can do like one of the moves he had was kind of like a flip senton into the corner.
Which yeah,
was pretty impressive for a guy.
Like a poor man Samoa Joe.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So he's definitely like smaller than Joe at this point. I don't think he can do like the array of kicks and the flexibility that Joe's got. But like for a guy that has that kind of stature and still able to move and do some of those pretty athletic moves, it's like pretty promising, right? I guess like somewhere between a Bray and a Samoa Joe's would be pretty accurate.
So what's your thought about Sami Zayn? I mean, you watched him a couple times, right?
Yeah, he's good. He's definitely good. So. It's not even as much necessarily my thoughts on like some of these individual guys, but I think part of what makes that show really good is, I mean, first of all, the guys on that show are really making that show are all like guys that paid their dues in the indie circuit, and they know what they're doing, so they're very experienced. But those are all like the I guess quote unquote vanilla midget types that people like to watch, right?
Yeah.
And that's where I think the difference is, right? So you look at a match like whereas Steen's not small by any means, like he's not having some slow prodding match like you know that Rowan and Big Show is going to turn into, or like what Ryback and Kane was going to be, right? It's very predictable what those matches were going to be, pretty obvious, like they're going to be kind of boring, right? So Steen isn't like kind of running that slow-paced match. I mean, it's a quick match, right? But a lot of energy there. Then there's a tag team match with Prince Devitt and Hideo Itoshi or Itomi, whatever it is, going against, I want to say, yeah, they beat the Ascension, who, you know, I could care less about the Ascension, but those guys, they put on an exciting match.
They're making the way into Raw,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then...
With the eye roll, even. You even gave the eye roll.
Yeah,
right there,
yeah. Well, yeah, the internet wrestling community has already like gone to town with the Road Warriors comparisons, and yeah, it kind of seems like that's what they're going to do. But even the times I've watched them wrestle a little bit, I mean, they're nothing impressive to me. But then the main event, you know, you got whatever the guy, the English guy that's got the hops. Shoot.
I have no idea who you're talking
blanking,
about.
I'm blanking on his name right
so
now.
So the main event wasn't for the title?
No, it was the title. That's the guy that was the champion.
Oh, okay. Oh, Neville.
Neville, yeah. Yeah. Neville the...
He's pretty vanilla, I think. Neville.
Personality-wise. Yeah. But he's pretty solid. I mean, he's a good high flyer, right? And so... But those are all the guys that, like, NXT is focused around, right? Whereas, like, and that's the kind of wrestling people I think want to see, not like, you know, these, you know, 300 plus and 500 pound guys just sit there throwing chair shots and throwing chairs. There's nothing innovative or creative. I mean, Kane versus Ryback. I mean, come on. Like,
well, Kane versus Ryback. The advice I'd give for Kane versus Ryback, if it's on DVD, just like hit the fast forward once, and they go at like probably 0.5 faster, and it's like watching a regular wrestling match. I mean, seriously. I mean, it's like they're so slow,
and you're not losing anything with the announce team.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Like, I want to get into that right now. Because, like, I haven't been able to watch NXT. I'm glad that you watched it. I'm going to watch Revolution. And I'm probably going to start watching, because what we talked about last week was, since I'm not happy with the Raw product. And there's a couple things I want to talk about. So, first of all, like, so you bring up a good point without even you knowing that you brought up a good point about how, you know, these smaller guys are the people that they want to watch. And
I knew that was a good point, but
yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Easy there, Barry. They're pat-patting on the back.
Where's my suspenders?
But like the one thing with like WCW, what they did was when they had that 3-hour package, and I'm looking at kind of, you know, it's funny to kind of watch wrestling now as compared to back then, because when you're watching wrestling, you usually would watch it when it was on, because it took too long to set up your VCR, because there was such things as called VCRs back then. And so you would have to watch the 3 hours for the whole thing. And then the commercials were important too, or the commercial breaks. And the one thing that WCW did really well before they went downhill was that they would have, like, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Jericho, Benoit. You know, Benoit was kind of the... It's funny that you watch the Monday Night Wars, and, like, so they always talk about, like, the young, you know, the small kind of athletic wrestlers, and they show when the Radicals come out, and they just show like Eddie and Dean, and they even had like the Fly of the Cruiserweights, and it's like, well, okay, like, yeah, Eddie and Dean were there, and they really focus on Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero, but it's like, well, the whole thing is that Dean really was kind of a sideshow to what Benoit was. I mean, Dean put on great matches, but Benoit was that one cruiserweight that could go up to the higher level and mm-hmm. face like the big heavyweights, like, not big heavyweights, but he could face guys like DDP, Booker T, and Fit Finley, and, you know, just bigger guys, and his style blended all with all that. So they had a really good kind of, you know, mid-show or, like, first hour, second hour, and they put on these really great athletic matches. And then they had, like, their main events or whatever it is, and their big guys, which was fine, but WWE hasn't found that formula yet, where they can have, you know, because the guys that can do that, the only guys that can really do that on the roster, they're put off in other places, so they're giving a push to Dolph, and I'm glad that Dolph is winning matches. I mean, he had like that match against this past Raw against against what's his name, the Yeah 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 guy.
It was a six man, right? A six man with him and wasn't it him and no, yeah, you're right. It was just him one on one.
Yeah,
Harper.
So, but I mean, but now that Dolph is kind of in a semi main event picture, it's like, well, now he's in a big match. And then the other guys that can put on good matches in that way is like Cody. Cody can do that, you know, but he's stuck in a tag team. I'm not saying, I mean, the tag teams are fun, and I like I like what they're doing. It's nice to watch, and I thought the New Day match versus Goldust and Stardust was an entertaining match. I mean, the matches they had on Raw were entertaining, but they don't have those small workers, and you can't have a small worker versus a small worker. Probably the best small worker they have right now that's not involved in anything is Tyson Kidd. But they're not letting him wrestle because he has to kind of do his whole show with Natalya and stuff, and how he's kind of like the jealous husband or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, to feed the whole Divas storyline that's not there.
It's not there.
You know, but it's just kind of... They haven't found that...
with Cesaro.
Yeah. Well, they haven't found that formula yet, you know, and so it's kind of... So that's one thing that, you know, you bring up with NXT is like, yeah, these smaller guys that people want to see... But you're not seeing that on the Raw product because all those guys that are small, they can't, in the Raw mentality, they can't make it. They would much rather have a long-ass early segment. And that first segment, it was nice to see Jericho come out.
Yeah.
But that segment was so, it was like 30 minutes, like a 30 minutes or 20 minute segment. And then, you know, then Cena comes out. And the best thing about Cena is like, he's like, hey, he's like, you know, he's like, be a man, dude. And like, you know. you're a little boy in this ring, and you know, blah blah blah. So it's like, you shut up. It's like, you think you paid your dues, but you never paid your dues, so you can't say that. I'm like, give me a break, you know. So there's that, and then you just have the announce team. And one thing, watching the Monday Night Wars, you're listening to Shivani. You're just like, God, I forgot how terrible that guy was, you know. But they're doing the exact same thing. Like that, like the announce team right now is just, it's just really bad, and it's. A lot of it has to do with the King. A lot of it has to do with Cole. And JBL can only do so much. But even JBL is losing his freshness. And it's just like, it's like watching Nitro again. Because like everything they're talking about is like, well, there's a match between New Day and Stardust and Goldust. And they're talking about like John Cena. Or they're making fun of, you know, they're making fun of Big E. You know, you want to see how bad the Raw product is. It's like, you had this great guy. You know, Big E came out fresh as all hell. You know, a monster in the ring, and now he's like talking like Jesse Jackson, and then they're making fun that he sweats, and it's just like, God, like what the fuck, what's going on, dude? And then you throw in that announce team. That announce team is just terrible. I mean, it's bad, dude. I'm missing the days of Gorilla. I mean, you know, Gorilla was pretty hokey, but at least he could call a flipping match. You know, and that, I think that really takes away from the product.
Yeah, I think so too. Those guys can't build up any given match, right? Like you said, they stick to their script where they're talking about, they're trying to, you know, when they're not forcing me to watch John Cena, then they're talking about John Cena, or just talking about a bunch of dumb stuff, or they can't react to things that are happening in the ring. Like Cole, you know, he didn't know, it doesn't seem like he really knows what's going on much at all. Lawler, I mean, it's a guy that his sole purpose is to be comic relief, and he's just not funny, right? And it's just dumb, dude. It's just dumb.
Well, the whole thing with the King is that he had guys before, like Ross. You know, since Ross was such a book of knowledge with what he said, the King played really well off of him. Well, when you have a guy that in Michael Cole that nobody really respects, I mean, like, Cole's not involved in the booking. He's not involved with talent relations. He doesn't know how to build up a star. Ross was able to do that, and Ross is such a good play-by-play guy. When you go down the line of play-by-play guys, you know, you have Gordon Sully, and you know, you never really listen to Gordon Sully, but the things that when I did listen to Gordon Sully, it was like, this guy is like he's an authoritative figure. He just had that persona of like knowing what he was talking about.
Well, there's that too, and then like there's also just this thing where like, I mean, Ross is like a encyclopedic memory and knowledge of the wrestling business. So, like, whenever he makes any kind of, like, reference to compare, like, a match to something that's happened or a guy to a guy from prior years, like he knows what he's talking about. And you're like, yeah, that's true. Like Cole can't make a reference that goes longer than 5 years into the past, right?
So, and if he makes a reference, you don't believe him or trust him,
right?
You know, he's Cole has always been the guy that's on the outside looking in, and he tries to be something that he's not, and I just don't respect anything that he says. And really, you know, it's funny, like, the wrestling should speak for itself, but the difference is that when you had Shivani was terrible, like just really really bad, but the guys in the ring that he would call the matches for were old-time pros. So, like, you could just... There are old-time pros where you didn't have to listen to Tony Schiavone's pros. Get it? Yeah, you like that, huh?
So there's a couple ways you could, like, kind of, like, frame it, I think. It's like, there's some guys that make the match better, and then there's some guys that are non-entities, like, they're just there, and, like, you can tune them out, and there's some guys that kind of make the match worse, right? And I think he's kind of going from a guy that it's just a non-entity to kind of like making the matches worse, and especially the combination of him and King. See, I think the thing with Shivani was, as bad as he was, you had Bobby Heenan, and Bobby Heenan could make any match worth listening to. But you got Cole, who's not good, saddled with King, who King really makes the broadcast worse. I think Cole on his own is a non-entity.
Yeah.
But the King is really dragging that show down. He hasn't been decent since, like, they had... Him and Ross worked, But that was back when King was a heel.
Yeah.
And ever since, King's tried to go as the babyface announcer, when they try to do Cole as that heel turn, King has never recovered. And the thing is, between King and Cole, neither one of them are good enough to elevate the other guy. JBL has the easiest job of the three heel. All he has to do is be a heel announcer, and he's pretty good at it. But he's not good enough to elevate those two guys to be respectable. Now, like, I think as the term that you've used was Cena before, the necessary evil. I mean, I think Cole is always going to be that because they like the way that he reads and spews out, like, the information that they need to get put out there, like directing people to the app, you know, all the other stuff that wrestling fans don't give a crap about, right? But at this point, like, there really is no reason to keep the King around. I mean, I'm not trying to say I don't want this guy to, like, have gainful employment or anything like that. You know, I would say that you might bring him into Mr. Rothstein's office and ask if there might be any position further down the trough for the King. But then, again, when I say that, like, there's nobody on the NXT announced team that's ready to step in. I think
you just make it a two-man announced team.
That's fine. Yeah. Or they want to bring a third guy, I would be fine with it too. Actually, I'll take that back. There is a man's man on the NXT team that I think would be the best option that could help out Raw. Now, I think Regal's pretty important to what NXT does. I think he's involved with a lot of the booking, and I think just having a guy with that kind of knowledge at your training center is invaluable. But that guy would elevate the Raw broadcast 100-fold if you replace the King with William Regal.
The biggest problem I have is that I don't believe any of those three guys. You know, it's like, oh, this is like, I even think it was like, oh, maybe it was like the steel cage. We're like, this is the best steel cage match ever. And I was like, no, it's not, D. I mean, like, come on. It's like, you can only say so much, but it isn't. You know, like, the problem is that you have these performers, and I'm going to start from the top on down. John Cena needs a lot of help. John Cena, you need to say, you need to spew hyperbole to make this guy, make his matches, like, seem bigger than life. He needs help. He can't do a match without someone, like, say, a CM Punk. I mean, any good John Cena match, he always had a really, really good opponent. Maybe even, like, the Brock Lesnar one where he got squashed by Brock Lesnar. The CM Punk matches that he did, they were good matches. The Daniel Bryan match that he did, great match. But if it's a guy if it's a new guy that hasn't had any traction, like a Seth Rollins, I mean, is Seth Rollins... a year down the line, 2 years down the line, going to be like a top-level performer? I think he is. But the problem is that they're not going to give him the freedom to see if he can do that. I mean, he's good on the mic, but then anything that he does on the mic when John Cena comes out, John Cena just squashes anything that he does. And there's no verbal, you know, Seth isn't strong enough yet to, like, cut John Cena off when it's not working. And the whole thing is that if you do cut John Cena off, then you're going to hear it backstage. So you have all these guys that can't really put on epic matches, and the guys that can, they're not going to be in the main event anyways. So you're watching the main event, and it's like it's John Cena, Seth Rollins, and they're trying to say how great this match is and stuff. And I'm saying, like, well, it's okay, but you know what spots John Cena is going to have, and you know, like, the whole kind of his AA off the top rope. It's like, okay, you know, like, I know why you're doing it. It's not anything really great, and then you kind of have, but the good news is that Brock comes out and Brock creates a stir, and I thought that was really good when he came out because it was nice to see. But it's just a case where it shouldn't, the problem that I see is that you have a really young crop of guys that can put on good matches, but they're limited to what your main event guy can do, which is John Cena. And they're limited by his storytelling, his story that he delivers in the ring all the time, where he kicks out of every single thing. And it's not really surprising. It's the same spot over and over again. And the whole thing is, like, this guy gets
the door slammed right on his head.
And he gets that.
Kick out like that.
And then when when Lesnar comes out and gives him his finisher, and then Seth gives him his finisher.
The curb stomp.
John Cena's eyes are open, and he's looking straight up at the lights. I mean, his eyes are open. It's like, well, I mean, don't you know if you have, like, two finishers like that, shouldn't you, like, close your eyes and pretend you're knocked out instead of opening your eyes? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. And so that's the whole thing, is that you're limited by what John Cena, the storytelling that John Cena does in the ring, and he's kind of the ring general in the ring. And you have Seth Rollins limited in that, and then you're also limited by the story that the announcers are trying to tell, since the announcers aren't good and they just can't let the match, since they can't bring anything new into the match or have any commentary that provides any insight. It's just, they're just out there, and it's just like a big, you know, it seems like everything's on the fly, like we're doing on this podcast. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's what they're limited by.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, Cole, like, his only response to any high spot is, I believe it's, oh my, like, every single time. Like, dude, you can't sit down one day and just, like, write, like, a few optional responses to when you see something impressive out there. It's just like, yeah, like, maybe he can't. Maybe he's too busy, like, practicing his reads for commercials for the app and other things that people don't really care about. But it... Yeah,
he's part of the machine. Yeah. I mean, he tells them, like, I mean, people tell him, I mean, McMahon's in the back telling him what to say, and he does it. He's a yes man, and there really isn't any strong personality. I mean, the Raw product, there's no strong personality that's bucking the system. There's nobody saying, like, you know, taking the engine that is WWE and poking holes into it and then developing their character and becoming bigger than the WWE. Right now, it's like, nobody's going to be bigger than us in terms of what we want to do in terms of storytelling. And you're not allowed to go up higher than where we want you to go. And I think that's the biggest difference between what you're talking about in the beginning, was that NXT, they're allowed to kind of develop who they want to be and be who they are. The announcers allow them to do that, and the announcers call a very straight match without trying to promote a pay-per-view or promote a WWE app. They just call it like it is. And that's what wrestling is. I mean, that's what... The reason why WWE is so successful right now is because of all the small things they did way back in the past. I mean, the 80s, the 90s. And now, like, they're this huge product. And they forgot, well, this is how you kind of maintain with what you want to do. They're at the top, and they're not... It's a whole complacent thing again.
I mean, I kind of wonder how much of this... And I might be reaching a little bit here, but I'm going to go back to, like, we were talking about those podcasts and the McMahon podcast. And, like, I was talking about how there was a question where Austin was asking Vince about, like, you know, why isn't the locker room like it is? And McMahon, like, pretty much just said, well, they're millennials. They think differently. They look at differently. And I kind of wonder if, like, part of the way that they do their programming and their thought process is like, well, we're just marketing to millennials, so all we need to really do is just tell them like what we say are the facts, and like they're just going to bite into it. And I mean, they have some evidence of that, because they can keep on spewing the John Cena propaganda machine, and you got kids going around here thinking, oh yeah, John Cena's the best that there ever was. And like, if they know these, or their perception is these millennials are just going to buy into whatever it is they sell and take it as fact, then they don't really, they're not concerned with, like, us, because we're kind of, like, aging out of the demographic, so they're not concerned. They know if we're still watching, we're probably going to keep watching for the most part, and I kind of wonder if a lot of that is, a lot of why the storyline is based like it is because of what his perception of how millennials view the world and how they accept information is.
And on top of that, his top guy is a reincarnation of Bruno Sammartino. I mean, Bruno Sammartino, if you listen to WWE, was one of the best performers of all time. But Sammartino is very vanilla. We have never watched a Sammartino match. We never want to watch a Sammartino match. And that's pretty much where John Cena is right now. Now, what I will say is that one of my biggest things about the WWE product right now, one of my biggest criticisms is that it's not fun. It's not a fun product. You don't sit there and watch it and have fun. But what I will say is that this Raw was a fun Raw to watch. I mean, it was fun to watch, but the only part that wasn't fun was the steel cage match. But everything else about it, it was fun. I watched. I don't think I skipped one match, and it was fun to watch. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you know, like the Dolph Ziggler match is like, all right, you know, like, so I watched the first part of the match. I fast forwarded it. I missed probably about the first 2-3 minutes after the commercial break, and I know I'm not missing anything. And you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not like it's a case where it's like, oh, I got to watch this match start to finish. I think the other problem too, if I ran the WWE, it's like, give me a match that I can. If you have a 15-minute segment, then give me a 15-minute match, and end it at the end of the commercial break. I do not like the commercial breaks because it seems like I don't have to watch it. You know, like it's all that stuff in between is not important enough, and the whole thing is like there's stuff that happens during the commercial break that I'm not seeing, and I'm watching after the commercial break. It's like, well, then I really don't need to watch it, because if it's not important enough for you to put everything in its entirety, and I know there's going to be a dead spot right before the commercial break, and I know there's going to be a dead spot right after the commercial break, it's like I don't need to watch the whole thing in entirety, and I'm not involved in the match as much as I would be if it was like main event. And that's why I really like main event, is because main event would have commercial breaks, but the whole thing is like it was 20 minutes of wrestling or 50 minutes of wrestling. You get back from the commercial break, it's another 15-20 minutes, and I'm involved in the match. Where this one is like, it's a commercial break, and it's probably going to go 5 or 6 minutes after, and then they're going to have some stupid skit or someone's being interviewed or something like that. I don't need to watch it.
Well, that's your fault, because you're not listening to Michael Cole, and you're not downloading the app.
Yeah, and I'm not listening to Michael Cole, because as we said before,
yeah,
the announced team is not good.
Okay, well, all right then. Did you watch the Super SmackDown?
I watched the last match because I was watching the end of Raw, and then like, oh, Super SmackDown's tomorrow. I was like, oh shoot! So I caught the last 10 minutes of Super SmackDown. And what I'm thinking is that same thing again. Main event wasn't all that great, but probably the everything leading up to it was really good.
Nah, you got me rethinking myself, because now I'm wondering what the main event was. Like, I know it in my mind.
It was Seth and Dolph, right?
Then it was very good. In my mind, that was the main event. But then I started thinking maybe they put that on at the hour mark, because they have to put, like, the Big Show on for their technical main event. But, yeah, that was the match. That match was good.
Yeah.
And you know, Dolph won.
It was a good match, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm starting to get worried here, because it's like I'm an addict, and I've been clean for a while, and they're trying to like get me to come over here and take the spike, right? It's like I've resigned myself that Ziggler's not going to get this push, right? And I'm just going to sit there and watch and enjoy matches. And now in the last 2 months, he's won some big matches, man. Like they pushed him huge to win that Survivor Series match. Then I didn't think he was going to win the ladder match. Like, once it's I was watching the match, I started getting the feeling, yeah, I think he is going to come through. But I really, all the way through, until he actually pulled that belt down, I didn't think he was going to necessarily win. And then to have, like, this guy, Seth, like, him straight up beat Seth Rollins, who really has only lost to John Cena ever since he's been with getting this authority push. Like, to have Dolph go over him legit, I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know how far can they take this, and how far will they? I mean, it can stop at any moment, and I'm almost wondering if he's not becoming like the beneficiary of Punk leaving and Daniel Bryan being hurt. I mean, I think maybe they now trust him to put him in the spot of what they were probably going to do with Daniel Bryan. Will they allow him to continue? Because he looks like, you know, like another thing referenced from Nick Manning grabbing the brass ring. Like JR says, maximizing your minutes. Dolph's been doing it, but like he's like, you can't even deny
he. Yeah, he's been doing it as a jobber, and now he's doing it as a contender
and a main eventer.
Yeah, and he'll only go as far as what they'll allow him to in the world of having the big guy, and I'm talking about Ryback, but having the bigger wrestlers which WWE seems to kind of come back to. He's only allowed as far as go in terms of what the Dolph and John Cena storyline is. And the difference is that John Cena needs to get hurt for Dolph to really kind of be in the really, like, the really top main event picture. Because you have him, I mean, the baby face of the company is John Cena, the heel of the company is Seth Rollins, which really is funny to me about, you know, about that. Because Brock is so intermittent in his appearances that he can't be the top heel. So it falls on Seth Rollins. And that's why I wanted to talk about Seth Rollins. But, I mean, he's paying his dues, and right now it's a cycle, right? So he paid his dues by being, by getting an early push, you know, and the format was different, you know, because he had ECW, SmackDown, and then Raw. And then he became like a main fixture on SmackDown. That's why I kind of liked when SmackDown was separate from Raw, because you allowed these guys to take off. And I think that's when you really became a fan of Dolph Ziggler. You liked him in ECW, and when he became a fixture on SmackDown, you really started, you know, I think that's when it started going higher with you. And the thing I remember at SmackDown is you had Dolph, you had Jack, and you had Cody. And these were the three guys that were really taken off there. But until John Cena is out of the main event picture, I don't see Dolph getting the belt. And there's two ways that it's going to happen. One is Cena will turn heel, but he won't do that unless he's involved in the Authority storyline, where he says, like, bring the Authority back, because he has the power to bring it back. That's one way he can turn heel. But if that's the case, it might be a case where when he brings the Authority back, then Triple H and Stephanie become babyfaces. Or the other thing, too, is that they trust him enough where they make Dolph Ziggler the top heel, and he's going against John Cena, and he's able to win the belt in some underhanded way, and then John Cena goes against him. And somewhere down the line, John Cena will win the belt, and then maybe Dolph gets squashed because of that. So that's kind of the whole thing. You talk about the whole attic thing with you with Dolph Ziggler. Those are only two ways I see this guy playing out. And I don't mind him being the second babyface. I don't mind him being the Intercontinental Champion and him actually, like, winning matches as the Intercontinental Champion. That's the way he should have been. I like watching him with the belt. And it's like, he's a four-time Intercontinental Champion. I'm like, okay, he's a four-time Intercontinental Champion, but this is his first Intercontinental Championship run, because he's actually winning now. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't... Yeah, so in both those scenarios you put through, I mean, I don't see either one of those happening, because none of them involve Brock Lesnar, right? And one thing I can be fairly certain of is Dolph's big push is not going to come at the expense of Brock Lesnar. I guess that can steer us into another somewhat interesting direction, because now Roman Reigns is back, and, like, all the talk, backstage before he got hurt was that he was going to be the guy in line to take down Brock at WrestleMania. And then I think there was some thought that, and so I think it's all laid out that Roman Reigns was going to win the Rumble and then go on to main event WrestleMania. And then when he was hurt, I was hearing that the new plan was going to be, because they weren't sure if he was going to be healthy for Mania, and that the plan would be to bring back Orton and give him this big face push, and then have him be the guy that took down Brock at WrestleMania, and him be some monster face. So, I know you got any thoughts on it. You think how that's going to play out either way? You think that injury has derailed Roman Reigns, or you think he can kind of step back in where he left off?
I think the injury derailed a lot of things with the product. I mean, because Reigns was the heir apparent, and I was buying into that. And, you know, anything that Reigns does, I was buying into it. The problem that I have right now with Reigns is that, so he shows up for and interferes with Rollins with Reigns. And I think right now, any time that you put anybody with Reigns, it's going to bog it down. Because it's a case where it's like, you have Dean Ambrose, right? And Ambrose is just hot as all hell. And it's like, well, let's put him in a thing with Seth Rollins. And then Ambrose just dies. I mean, like, the whole thing is like, you haven't even talked about the Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose match. And I think that says a lot. You know, like, if I was really invested in, because I'm invested in Bray Wyatt, I'm invested in Dean Ambrose, I'm invested in Seth Rollins, I'm invested in with Roman Reigns as well. But I didn't even ask you. I should have asked you the first time. I was like, well, what happened with the Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose match? I have no idea what happens. I don't want to know what happens, because I just don't care. So I think Reigns, you know, to answer your question, I think Reigns can step in and Reigns can be the champion. But then at the same time, it's like, well, then when is, so who is John Cena going to face? And who is John Cena going to fight during that time? Because they have to put him in a program. And I just, the main cog in the wheel is going to be, is John Cena. You know, so it's like, even with CM Punk's reign, it's like, everybody points to CM Punk's 434-day reign, but he was never the main event. As a champion, for 434 days, your champion was the second-to-last match. And it was John Cena as the main event. And I think that's going to be that case until I don't know when. I mean, it's Hulk Hogan all over again. And Macho Man was the champion for a year, but you still had to deal with Hulk Hogan, you know. And the whole thing was that Macho Man could have stood by himself, but you had to put Hulk Hogan had to do something. And so you pair them up, you pair him with Macho Man. And while all the matches are going on with Macho Man and Hulk Hogan as a team and stuff, the guy you're watching is Macho Man. So is that a bad thing? I don't know, because that's when I really started liking Macho Man. So, I mean, if Roman Reigns becomes champion, whatever it is, and he pairs up with John Cena, I think Reigns is smarter than that, and I think Reigns has more charisma, because they're right before he got hurt, they're starting to, like, John Cena was starting to give him the rub, and what it really turned out to be was that Reigns was giving John Cena the rub. And even though you have all this empirical evidence that John Cena is really a secondary figure now, they're always going to put him as the number one object that we should watch, and then there's everybody else. Well, to me, this roster is so deep, and they have so many good performers, and you can take Zayn, you can take Sting, you can put them, you can put those guys on, on Raw, and they're going to put on great matches, but then it's going to get bogged down because John Cena needs his airtime.
So there's that side of it, and then, like, I think the other side of it is, at some point, like,
first of all, we're not coming off negative, right? Are we kind of coming off negative right now or not?
I think now we're a little more positive. I think there's about 20 minutes of negativity in there, so I think it's more questioning right now. I think it's the investigation phase. So this is how I would pose it this way. Okay, so I think at some point in time they're going to have to get with some kind of youth movement, right? They're going to have to let, not that these guys are particularly young, but they're going to have to kind of let these new guys.
You have to go with the indie movement,
right? Or they're not. Those guys didn't know how to wrestle until Triple H showed them how. Okay, but we'll leave that to the side, right?
Well, here's the whole thing that I want to bring up, though, is because you're talking about like how the Raw roster wanted to put on a better show than NXT, and one thing that came out through Reddit was that there was a talent only meeting for Raw where they wanted to kind of, some of them wanted to not put on it to mail it in because they were backing Triple H. They wanted to back Triple H with what Triple H wants for the company, and which really threw me for a loop because I thought Triple H was kind of running the company, but they really kind of wanted to stick to Vince and say, hey, like, you know, we want to go Triple H's route. And that's kind of like the whole thing, because I think maybe we're misinformed because we're going like, well, Triple H is doing stuff, but what I kind of read from Reddit, and these are all like super like smarts to the point where they become marks on smarts. They're a mark for their smarkiness, and they're saying like the roster for Raw was saying like, well, we want to go Triple H's direction, what Triple H wants, and we don't want to follow Vince anymore. And John Cena was kind of going like, well, you know, that's not the way to do it. It's like we have to like give our best and put on the best matches possible. You know, we can't do it by like not doing well. You know, like, the only way we can do is to show how great we are. It's like, well, but at the same time, John, it's like, the way that it is that you're always going to be the top guy that's going to get the best out of everything. And so it's kind of interesting in that respect where they kind of want to go Triple H's route in terms of Vince McMahon's route. And that's I brought this up probably about three podcasts ago, was that you don't know who's in charge. You don't know who's running the show. And I think they do that on purpose so you can't pick and blame anybody else. It's like Vince can come out like a rose, and then Triple H, you know, it gets the ire of everybody. But what I'm kind of feeling is that Triple H wants to go a certain way, and Vince is holding everybody back.
Yeah, I read something along those lines. wasn't as specific as that. I didn't know about that meeting or anything. But basically, we're kind of saying that it kind of implied that the direction things are going now is a lot more of Vince McMahon's design than Triple H's, and that once Triple H took over and had like full say on what was going to happen, that you would start to see a lot of these indie type like athletic younger smaller guys getting the push rather than this kind of old generation. Like I don't even know if there's a name for this run. Like, you know, you have like the Attitude Era. I don't know what you would call this. I guess they call it the PG era now, maybe.
Yeah, the reality era.
But yeah, that was Triple H tried to call it the reality era, which was pretty lame considering a lot of the stuff he was doing. But anyway, so like, but onto where I was trying to go with this, and if that in fact is going to happen, right? Okay, so like, let's say these are your options, right? So you're heading towards WrestleMania. And again, at some point, they're going to have to go with some of these newer guys and build new stars and future stars.
So why do you say that, though? I don't agree with you on that. I agree with what you're saying, but WWE doesn't need to do that.
Well, at some point, John Cena, you know, I'm sure when he's 80, he's not going to be able to wrestle anymore. So maybe at
John Cena can go on for another 10 years, you know? I mean, he can go on for another 10 years being the top guy, because the difference is, like, Hulk Hogan, towards the end of his run, since he couldn't put on a good match, it just wasn't there. But for some reason, John Cena has a handful of more talent than Hulk Hogan does. And John Cena can put on matches against guys that are really good. He can be the fall guy, and he puts on a really good match that way. But I don't see any... Like, when Hulk Hogan had his run from, like, you know, 85 all the way to, like, 90, when it got to, like, 91, 92 in WWE, he couldn't do that much, and his matches were boring because he couldn't wrestle. John Cena can wrestle, and that's why I think I don't see any end in sight with this guy in terms of how long he's going to be a top guy.
Can I at least, like, ask
you can do
question?
Whatever, you can do whatever you want, dude.
Well, I've tried twice now, so... Let me finish the thought, and then I mean, that's a reasonable answer to what I was going to ask, but I would at least like to get it out. So, I mean, you got this. At some point, there's going to have to be something. Something's going to happen, right? So, you're kind of at this opportunity to have this fork in the road, okay? And from the stuff that I've heard, like I said, Reigns was the original plan, but when the Reigns thing wasn't happening, Randy Orton, like, was another option. So, like, just say, like, those are the two options out there, right? One kind of says, okay, we're going back to Randy Orton, who isn't exactly John Cena, but it's more of the same, and a guy that they trust in a championship spot. And one says, hey, you know, we're gonna like let a new guy, someone different, come in here. Like, that could be like it has the potential. I'm not saying it's gonna happen, but that. If they decide to go the Reigns route instead of Orton, that's something that can send a message to, like, okay, now they're starting to let some of us next generation guys get into the main event picture. Whereas if they go the other way, go Randy Orton, like, more status quo. Okay, so I don't know. I just think that that's something that you can look at as far as if the company is going to kind of go in another direction or if they're going to continue to do what they've been doing. And then I'll let you answer, but I'll answer what you threw in last time. The other thing, and I'm devil's advocate on this, I'm not saying that you're wrong, and Cena's not going to have 10 more years, but the big difference between him and Hogan, like, because you're correct, Cena's a much better worker than Hogan was, but Hogan actually had the ability to reinvent himself and change it up periodically. You wouldn't have any evidence from what he's doing now, but at that time when he was doing the NWO thing, you know, he was able to completely reinvent himself and add another 5-10 years to his career. So if John Cena, he's going to get to a point where he's going to have to reinvent himself if he wants to continue. Because it worked, the fact that Hogan couldn't wrestle, because now he had like 10 guys backing him up, and that made it something that you could buy into. And that was part of the reinvention. So, I mean, I think... Even if John Cena is going to try to extend this thing and be the next Hogan in that sense, he still would have to figure out a way to reinvent himself. Because if he's like a, if he's like a 60-year-old man, just like kicking out of like steel chair shots and finishers on 1.5, like someone's not going to buy into it at some point.
So, is there a question?
Yeah, I mean, it was more like,
do I think John Cena can reinvent himself?
Well,
or do I think that these new guys can take over?
Well, do you think that would be like a kind of clear signal? Do you think like you can look at the Royal Rumble and look at between Roman Reigns and Randy Orton, if one of those guys wins the Rumble, let's say it's Randy Orton, do you think that's like a true like signal to the people that some change is on the way, or do you think they would immediately go back and bury Roman Reigns at some point?
I don't think they're going to bury Roman Reigns. I think there's a lot of things they like about Roman Reigns. And I'm talking from skill set, on the mic set. He has shown that he can be a heel. He's shown that he can be a baby face without being a, you know, like, kiss the baby's baby face. He has enough respect from the marks and the smarks. Not the super smarts, but he has enough respect from everybody where everybody likes him. And that's really like the difference with like the Shield and all these guys, is that the Shield and CM Punk, to a small part, everybody liked those guys. And I'm not just talking about, you talk about like Twitter. I think the most important aspect of what CM Punk did and what the Shield did was that not only were they able to have like people like me and you that have watched wrestling for a long time like them, but the support from they got from the women, and I'm not talking, you know, from the part where like, oh, you know, he's so cute, this, that, and this, and the, oh, like, oh, I love Dean Ambrose, and I love Seth Rollins, oh, and Roman Reigns. So they had that contingent of female fans. But then you had like female fans that don't really get, you know, that are true fans. They were able to go across the whole spectrum of people liking them. And we bring up Hulk Hogan and we compare him to John Cena. I think that's a very bad comparison, because the whole thing with Hulk Hogan is that a lot of people don't realize, and I don't know if you realize, but when he was in AWA, he was a heel. And he was a very good heel. I mean, he was like what you saw him like in Rocky III as a heel. That's the way he was in AWA. Mm-hmm. And then when he did the whole Rocky thing, which AWA didn't want him to do, and that's how he was able to go to Vince, then he became a great face. The whole thing was that Hulk showed in the past that he could play a heel. He could play a heel. He had the best babyface run of all time, and I will take that. I will take that against anybody. Ric Flair, Macho Man, Hulk Hogan as a face during that time was the best face ever. And then at the same time, when he became a heel, he was the best heel ever. The only heel that was better than him was Rocky. But then what happened? Brock was so great that he became a face. You know, he was this character that people hated, but they're like, wait a minute, this guy's so good that I'm going to start liking him. John Cena has not proven that he could be a heel. And the whole thing is, you asked about Randy Orton, you asked about Roman Reigns. If they win the belt, it does not signify to me that they're ready to go with these guys. What it signifies is that they will be the champion, but they're going to play second fiddle to John Cena, just like CM Punk did. Because out of all the wrestlers over the past 10 years, the best wrestler out there was CM Punk. And what ended up happening? He got so frustrated that he basically got pushed out. And Michael Hayes didn't like him. Triple H didn't like him. And they're talking in Vince McMahon's ear, you know, and not you don't have like Triple H as the angel and Michael Hayes as the devil, going like, oh, hey, you know, they're both like, they're on both of Vince's shoulders. They're saying, this guy sucks, you know, this, that, and this. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with Vince's age. I think, you know, he's not, and since there's no competition, he doesn't have to make drastic changes. If Randy Orton wins the belt, good, great. If Roman Reigns wins the belt, great, no problem. But you're going to always have CM Punk, you're always going to have John Cena in the picture. And so the easy way is like, well, make John Cena a heel. John Cena has not proven that he could be a good babyface, let alone a good heel. See, everybody thinks that if John Cena turns heel, it's going to change the business. He's not a good babyface. He's not a good personality. If you turn him heel, I don't think he's going to. I don't know if he can be a good heel. And do I want to give him the benefit of the doubt? You know, John, try being a heel. I don't think you're going to be a good heel. The difference with Hogan was that, and I didn't know at the time, when Hogan became a heel, he was a great heel. As good as he was as a babyface, I will take his NWO run as a heel, and I thought it was better than when he was during the whole WWE machine. The thing is that when Hulk Hogan was a babyface, me and you rooted for Hulk Hogan. Even though we didn't like him, he had such natural charisma, and you look at his promos now, and his promos are just garbage, right? But they're better than any promo that John Cena has ever done. I think I can count on my hand how many good promos John Cena has had, but I've had to suspend my belief and kind of say, okay, John, I'm going to try to support you in this in what you're doing. The best promo he ever did was, I think, when it was kind of like teetering back and forth, like, you know, is he on Stephanie and Triple H's side a couple months ago or whatever it was. He cut a great promo. But I suspended my disbelief about that. I took all the hate that I have of John Cena. I said, okay, what do you got? I'm going to listen to you for what you have. What can you do? And it was mildly good, but I had to kill part of my wrestling fan. I had to totally like kill that off to listen to what he was saying. Until he becomes a heel, I can't say, oh, it's going to be great, because everything that he's done, he hasn't done one thing. His babyface run, the only time that I have liked John Cena was his first match against the Big Show, when he put the AA on the Big Show, and I was like, okay, this guy can take off. Let's see what happens. Well, I saw what happened. Nothing happened. So if Randy Orton has the belt, if Roman Reigns has the belt, it doesn't matter, because you have John Cena right there. And you want to talk about best for business, he doesn't do anything that's best for business. Everything he does is best for John Cena. And it's best for the brand. And that's what WWE is behind. It's like, he is our brand, and this is where we're going with. I just can't see it. And there's no reason for them to turn him heel, because there's no competition. They don't have to do anything drastic, because they're the only show in town. So it's more of the same. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, either John Cena has to be hurt, or maybe, you know, here's what we do. Here's what I'm asking all the fans to do right now. The next big movie that John Cena does, where they're going to release it in the box office, me and you are going to go. I'm going to take my girls. You're going to take your kids. We're going to watch that movie every single day for 5 days straight, just to get the box office numbers up, so he can leave wrestling for a while.
So he can think people want.
And so he can leave for a while, and then you can develop your guys and force him to play by the new guys' rules of what they established. Right now, everybody has to play by his rules. He's not a good babyface. He hasn't proven that he can be a heel, and that's where he's at. He's the Mark Wahlberg of wrestling, dude. You know?
Nah, he's the Donnie.
He's the Donnie.
And he's not even the real Donnie. He's the Sklar Brothers Donnie.
Yeah. He's the Sklar Brothers Mark Wahlberg. Donnie, why are you selling all my DVDs at the restaurant?
you got me with the Donnie. No, I mean,
why are you selling my DVDs in the drive-thru?
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying that for quite a while. I don't think he could be a good heel. He hasn't shown anything on the microphone to say that he could cut good heel promos, because all his face promos are corny as all get out.
That promo that he did in the beginning of Raw, just that shows everything that's wrong with this guy. It's like, you know, be a man. It's like, well, you're not a man. You know, it's like, you take your loss this time. It's like, dude, shut the hell up. And I was like, when have you ever faced adversity in the WWE? You know, it's like, who are you to tell me what a man's supposed to be when everything's flipping given to you? It's like, give me a break, dude. Yeah. You know, it's like, am I supposed to cheer you for that?
Well, for me, the one that was even worse was when he basically, whenever he has like a beef with Randy Orton, and he goes to, like, he starts telling Randy Orton how everything was given to him, and he didn't have to earn anything, and he never paid any dues. And basically, he basically runs down the whole profile of his career, and then tries to pass that off on Randy Orton. I mean, yeah, Randy Orton was fast-tracked because he was a second-generation guy. But Randy Orton's been, I mean, and through a lot of fault of Randy Orton's own, but Randy Orton has been held down for a large part of his career because of choices that he's made. okay, but he still had to kind of fight through those things to get himself back into a guy that the WWE like head offices can rely on and feel comfortable with putting him in big events, whereas John Cena has never had to have that issue, you know, ever since. And again, I go back to it, like, the two people I guess we could probably blame more than anything are The Rock and Brock Lesnar, because if those two guys didn't walk when they walked, John Cena would have never amounted to anything. Okay, John Cena was just like the last guy standing when basically wrestling was about to start on another one of its downturns. Okay, Brock had other, like, basically the two biggest guys in the company had other ways that they could go make money. And The Rock, you know, took off his movie career. Brock made it in the NFL and the UFC. And all that was left was basically John Cena. And then, you know, Angle was still, you know, in his prime at the time. But Angle had then, you know, there had to be somebody that Angle would put over. And pretty much that's how everything got handed to John Cena. So that's when I really have a problem, is when he starts like projecting all of his flaws onto Randy Orton and guys like that.
And then when he had a big run, a lot of people weren't watching wrestling. I mean, you were like one of the only few people that were watching wrestling. To me, you're more of you're a bigger fan than I am, because you're watching during that whole time when it wasn't worth watching.
I wasn't watching religiously. I was in and out, but the guys that I liked, like Edge, I thought was doing really well. Randy Orton, you know, I was liking Randy Orton. It was still like early in his career and stuff. At the time, I had no problem with Batista. You know, I thought Batista was fine for what it was. But it was guys like Edge, really, Edge and Christian, that kept me in it. Chris Jericho, yeah, those were the guys that kept me watching. And
yeah,
the thing was that they all got good runs.
Yeah.
Like, and then that's like one of the reasons I really love Edge. Is because in the time when John Cena was at like what you would consider the height of his powers, Edge was like the one guy that would go out there and really kind of had John Cena's number for about 3 to 5 years, and so he always holds like kind of that special place in my heart for being that guy that when you knew when John Cena was going to beat everybody he went against, like Edge would always come out and get over on him somehow.
Yeah, John Cena, he's a leech. I mean, He is Bruno Sammartino. I mean, it's like all the, you know, wrestling got a big surge, and because of Daniel Bryan, because of CM Punk, and this guy was able to position himself to be the top guy, when the reason why wrestling was so big wasn't because of him, it was because of all these other guys, and then he became, which you like to deem, what I say, he became the necessary evil, because you had to have a guy that you hung your hat on. And he's, when you know, when he's no longer in the picture, and then when he retires and stuff like that, he's going to get all the accolades, and they're going to say how great he is and how what he did for the company and stuff. But they say the exact same about Bruno Sammartino. I have, you know, you look at the matches back then, or the people back then. You have Andre the Giant, you have Ric Flair, Stan Hansen, all these other guys, like all these, like, you know, Superstar Billy Graham, Harley Race, like all these guys that were just like legitimate, you know, tough guy wrestlers.
Ventura,
and but Sammartino was like, well, he was the champion, this, that, and this. Sammartino was the guy, and it's like, well, yeah, but who remembers Sammartino? I mean, Sammartino's DVD. Is there a Sammartino DVD? And if there is, has anybody ever bought it? It's going to be the same thing with John Cena, you know, and it's not going to be until this guy is away from wrestling that they're going to be forced to go with another guy. And what you're saying about Randy Orton and Roman Reigns, yeah, give them their runs, go ahead. Give them their championships, but they're not going to be the main guy. And same thing with what happened with CM Punk. Daniel Bryan got hurt, and so he wasn't able to get the run that he did. So it's kind of unfair for us to kind of say, like, well, I think Daniel Bryan, of all the guys, could have really taken off like CM Punk did. And you could have had, you know, We bagged WWE, but at the same time, they gave us what we wanted with CM Punk. They started giving us what we wanted with Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan got hurt. So they fall back on John Cena. Now you have all these guys that are coming up, and you're right. There is a fork in the road. But the whole thing is that I don't believe that they're going to take the right fork. I think they're going to go with the same path that they're going.
before it splits and then comes back together, and John Cena stands there saying hi on both sides of it.
Saying he's a man, you know.
Yeah, saying be a man.
Be a man, yeah.
Be a man, Hulk. Yeah, hey, John Cena can't even rap better than Macho Man.
Macho Man, yeah. Macho Man, Macho Man's a good rapper.
I'm gonna go rap about one Hulk Hogan, but then I got a special dedication song for the perfect friend and Kurt Hennig.
So whatever it is, dude. I didn't get any audio for the Golden Mic, but we can Golden Stick, but we can get one real fast if you want to put this on hiatus for a second. And we can figure and think what we want to do. You want to do that, or do you want to just kill the stick for right now?
Let the stick go for a week. Let's do this. I'm gonna make a controversial proposal here for the Hall of Kayfabe, and then
because I have a Hall of Kayfabe all ready to go. But go ahead. I like controversy.
Okay. And I'm not even like a huge fan of either one of these people that I'm going to suggest that we nominate. And specifically in their current state of professional wrestling. But on past achievements alone, let's just pretend we cut this off with them as a tag team in their WWE run. And like pretend that whatever happened afterward.
The Brainbusters?
No.
Skinny Bitches?
Yes. Yes. Well, one of them is no longer a skinny bitch. Now he's a fat bitch. In a lot of the IWC's eyes, but I think that the Hardy Boys should get in.
Okay.
Strictly as a tag team, and their contributions during the Attitude Era, and I think I got to thinking because I was like, in my mind, I was trying to wonder, do we induct Edge and Christian? And we didn't as a tag team, but we inducted both of them as individuals, and which is fine, which is good. Both of them, I think, deserve. I mean, they could be like the first ever double inductees because we could also probably induct them as Edge and Christian, the tag team. But I'm thinking about, like, you know, where some of these great matches that Edge and Christian had. And we talked when we're inducting about all these TLC and different kind of like gimmick tag matches that were going on. And the Hardy Boys were right in the middle of that mix at all times. And I thought they were a really good tag team.
Joe, I'm gonna cut you off right there.
All
right. I agree with what you're saying. But we cannot put them in before we put in the Dudley Boys. Dudley Boys have to be in there before before the Hardy Boys.
Because they were in the conversation
And when you said Hardy Boys, I wasn't like a Bad News Brown riding to Jack Tunney and thinking of all the bad things that happened to me and my eyes like got all big, like, oh, and I'm getting all mad writing this letter. But We can put the Dudley Boys in, but I would much rather put in Bubba Ray. For now, I think Bubba Ray deserves his own thing with all the stuff that he's done.
My only hang up on that is that I don't think Bubba's done.
Okay.
And we kind of hedged once or twice on guys that aren't completely retired, but like that would be the only That'd be the only reason. Like, I think, in terms of WWE, I think the Hardy Boys are done. I think there's, like, a glimmer of hope that Bubba Ray could get.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Let's put the Hardy Boys in there. Well, even though I think we should put Dudley Boys in first, let's go ahead. I will follow your lead and let's put the Hardy Boys in.
Okay. So, I mean, I think they were in the middle of a ton of really good matches. You know, Jeff Hardy had a bunch of, like, ridiculous high spots that he really put his body on the line. And where I never thought that Jeff Hardy was any good on the mic, there was a time where I thought, like, his career arc had the Shawn Michaels arc,
exactly.
And he had it all laid out there for him. And, you know, it went off the rails, you know, there was, like, addiction things and stuff like that. But just in the ring, like, the two of those guys, and like, Matt Hardy, like, I got some respect for Matt Hardy because, like, there is really nothing special about Matt Hardy. Like, he's a pretty solid worker. He's pretty athletic in his younger days, but, you know, he kind of aged out a lot quicker than Jeff did. But he was able to reinvent himself and a pretty, with limited athletic ability, make himself, like, a viable singles guy at times, get in a couple of decent feuds, especially like the one with Edge, like came pretty personal and pretty real. But I thought like that guy was times where Jeff was just kind of a mess, and Matt, even though isn't probably half the talent that Jeff had, could carry that thing and make them like a kind of fun tag team. And so, like, you know, all whatever they are now, you know, I don't want to, you know, dwell on that, but in their time, the last time, you know, that tag team wrestling was relevant in the Attitude Era, they were right in the mix with Edge and Christian, with the Dudley Boys, we talked about Jericho and Benoit as a really good tag team. They were right in there and, you know, right on par with all those guys.
You don't have Edge and Christian without the Hardy Boys. And, you know, I said the Dudley Boys and everything like that, but the feud that Edge and Christian had with the Hardy Boys really breathed in new life with the WWE. And I want to say that that feud right there really kind of set the tone for putting the nail in the coffin for WCW. Because without the Hardy Boys being the foil for Edge and Christian, because Edge and Christian became so huge in terms of being heels, and they had the perfect foils in these guys because they didn't have any personality. But the second you got those two guys in the ring, the matches were epic. I mean, they stole the show for, I think it was WrestleMania. I mean, and I remember, I didn't watch that match.
That was like the first TLC match, I think.
Yeah.
Or one of the first.
Well, they spawned the whole TLC. Yeah. It was the first TLC match, and then it spawned the whole, I mean, yeah. The reason why we have TLC now is because of those four guys. But I remember.
Six. Because Dudleys were part of it, too.
Were they part of it, too?
Yeah.
Well, all I remember, though, is after that match and the Monday after, you have all those four guys in the ring, and they shake each other's hand, and it's like, okay, you know, they had it, you know, during the whole Attitude Era when your mid-tier guys were Triple H, The Rock, Stone Cold, you could probably put Bret Hart in there every now and then. They had a really, you know, New Age Outlaws, even Mankind and Terry Funk. You had all these guys in the early parts of Raw that carried it, and then the main event was even better than that. Every segment you had to watch, and it kind of lulled after a while, and then you bring in these four guys, and you bring in the Dudley Boys as well, and, I mean, the Dudley Boys, I mean, that's a whole different story with those guys. But they became the guys that you wanted to watch, because DX wasn't around. I think X-Pac and Road Dogg were a tag team, and you had Mr. Ass by himself, and just, it's like, dude, put these guys back together. And it's like, you know, what you're doing right now isn't working. These six guys came in, and I'm going to say four, because Dudley Boys really didn't come into until later on during that time. But you brought these four guys in, and all of a sudden, Edge and Christian just took off. I mean, these guys, to me, were up there with The Rock and Stone Cold with the antics they did, with the showmanship. They were like the New Age Outlaws.
Yeah. I think it's a good comparison you bring up to Rock and Austin, because one of the things they always say were, like, just physically, genetically, the two were kind of meant to do battle with one another.
Well, even Rock and Triple H.
Right, and Rock and, yeah. Triple H right in there as well. And I think you can say the same thing for Edge and Christian versus the Hardy Boys. Like, physically, genetically, mentality-wise, those four guys were just, like, made to do battle with one another. It's even good that with all of this that we're saying, we can get through all this about the Hardys and not even bring up Lita.
Right? I was just going to bring her up.
And the only reason...
And I
think
gotta,
Lita...
I'm gonna, go ahead.
I mean, I think at some
whoa,
point...
Whoa, hey.
Yeah. At some point, Lita...
The snake.
Just Lita's going to have to make it in here on her own merits as well. So, I mean, I don't know if we want to, like, necessarily lump her in here because... She's gonna get her own time at some point.
Well, here's
Lita,
let's not talk about Lita.
Not too much, but just to say, like, in the thing where they were good in the ring and there wasn't a ton of like personality to what they did, Lita brought something different that made you want to watch them.
Their Team Extreme run was really good. You know, you coach and I coach, and you have your stars, like your main players and everything like that. But then you have these other players that are just as important, and if they don't make a game or whatever it is, your whole strategy of what you're going to do in the game just gets thrown by the wayside. And say you have like, so what we run into when we coach soccer is that you get like a first year player, and you're just like, fuck, I mean, like, what am I going to do with this first year player? It's like, well, put them with the player that knows what to do and put them together where they can interact with each other. And that player that's really good will hide not only hide the deficiencies of the new player, but they'll put them in spots where that new player can succeed. The Hardy Boys made Edge and Christian better. Edge and Christian were good. I mean, don't get me wrong, but they enhanced Edge and Christian. And at the same time, they made a star out of Lita, too. I mean, without Edge and Christian, you don't have Edge and Christian. You don't have Lita. And you don't have the Dudley Boys, either. You need to have that base. Now, were they the best performers there? I think Edge came out of that whole thing where Edge was the top performer. But then even if you look at Christian, I think Christian was better than Edge and Jeff. And you can say...
Than Matt and Jeff.
Yeah, Matt and Jeff. Jeff was better than Matt was, but you needed the guy to tie everything together, and I really think that was Matt Hardy. I think Matt Hardy was the base to make all the, you know... Edge became a star. Christian became a star. Jeff became a star. The Dudley Boys became a star. Lita became a star. I don't think that really happens without Matt. And what Matt did was Matt tied everything together. He tied the Hardys together. He tied Lita together. And the two, you know, Matt and Jeff really enhanced Edge and Christian, really enhanced the Dudley Boys. And I don't think Matt really gets the credit that he deserves.
Matt was the carpet that tied the room together.
Yeah.
Like the dude once said.
The dude, yeah. I've never seen that movie in its entirety. But that's besides the point. But yes, I really think, Jeff was doing stuff that I never saw before. His Swanton Bomb was great. And Matt kind of invented the Twist of Fate. It was a nice move, but it didn't compare to what Jeff was doing in the ring. And Matt was the mic man of the group, and that couldn't compare to what Edge and Christian were doing. And then you bring the whole like in ring antics of the Dudley Boys, what they did. I mean, you go from like, you know, from what Bubba did, and then even when what's his name, Devon, when Devon this major move would happen to him, and he just starts like shaking in the ring and like
he's feeling,
yeah, all this stuff. So
well, even I don't know. The Bubba Ray stutter, like mm-hmm. that one was a pretty good mic gimmick as well.
Yeah, but it doesn't work without Matt.
Yeah,
and then Jeff was able to really take off. So yeah, I mean, the Hardy Boys definitely don't get their due. I like them because they try to give them the whole like new Freebirds gimmick, and I was a huge Michael Hayes fan, and I love the Freebirds. So it's like let's bring the Freebirds back into the fold. Let's do it. And slowly that got taken away, and you start looking at these guys, and you look at like, you know, these are the workers, and they combated, they did, and I'm not even bringing in the guy that I want to bring in, but they combated the whole kind of Benoit, Guerrero, Dean Malenko, Perry Saturn gimmick, or what was going on there in WCW. They were combating that because they were kind of in the same mold of what those four guys were, and they gave legitimacy to WWE in terms of when it was WCW versus WWE, when Benoit and Guerrero and Malenko and Perry Saturn were on, I'd watch them. Well, because it was easy to do, but the second that you started having Edge and Christian with the Hardys and the Dudley Boys, I stopped watching WCW, you know, because it was like, okay, I already know what's going to happen with the Revolution. So I already know what's going to happen, and that's what's going to happen. Well, I don't know what's going on with these guys, so I'm going to start watching this. To me, when those four guys came on, I stopped watching WCW. And what I want to add on top of that was when they stole the show, the most famous part of that whole story when they stole the show in that pay-per-view, who didn't have a match during that pay-per-view? And who realized, like, okay, I got to start doing something because these guys are taking off, and I have way more experience than these guys do. And I know I'm better on the mic. Not Foley, Jericho.
Yeah.
Jericho was sitting on the sidelines during that thing, and he said that was a major turning point in his career, saying, okay, I can't rest on my laurels. Now I have to start trying to do stuff. So not only did the Hardys create these two great tag teams while they're being a great tag team and bringing back the Diva division with Lita, like wrestling like a guy. But not only that, but it forced Chris Jericho to be to be a better person than he was, and it forced Chris Jericho to be a top talent in the WWE.
And I think you can take it a step further and not just leave it at Jericho, but I think it put the whole locker room on notice that hey, we gotta top that. You know, we gotta step up. We're doing more than just Jericho. But yeah, no, absolutely. So I don't know. I think
that's
know,
a good pull right there. Yeah,
I think, rack 'em, especially for being a tag team that neither one of us were tremendous fans of, to be honest. Like, you know, fun to watch. But yeah, I think they deserve their.
I had a lot of high hopes for Jeff Hardy. I really wanted Jeff Hardy to succeed.
Yep.
And he never did. And but at the same time, it's like, you know, I really think like they started doing the whole brother versus brother thing, you know, which WWE's want to do. And but they changed the game, and they did it for the better.
And I think also Jeff. While him feuding with Punk probably should have enhanced his career, I don't think it did.
Yeah.
I think verbally CM Punk just kind of made that guy look really bad, and then he had another relapse, and I think that was it for him.
Yeah. And so the whole thing is we're saying that Matt Hardy really enhanced everybody's career. The whole Jeff Hardy CM Punk feud, that's when I started taking notice, because yeah, the mic time was a little bit too long for all of them, but I really started listening to CM Punk, what he was saying, and I know you didn't like CM Punk because he just talked on and on and on, but that's when I started noticing him, and then I think it really propelled him. Like he proved that him and Jeff could have a program that meant something, because Jeff was already made by Undertaker. Undertaker like made Jeff Hardy to be a singles guy, and then Jeff fell off the wagon, and then CM Punk was able to go into that spot too. So these two guys, you know, not only to me did they kill, they put the final nail in the coffin for WCW, but then they created the careers 5 years earlier of Jericho, and then they took off. You know, they created the career of CM Punk to be what CM, and we all know what CM Punk did and what he's doing now. So that good job. You did your homework on that one.
I just thought about it on the drive over.
Yeah, that's homework, you know.
Yeah.
So we were at Minnesota number 89. Maybe Minnesota number 90s when we do the Moody's. Yeah, the Moody's, yeah. We have a bit of how many donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. And good to go, man. Drezin Mr. Long, dude.
Yes, sir. Mr. Long's going to enter once again.
There you go. All right.
Oh, big breasts.
There you go. I do it better, but hey. It's all good.
It's your gimmick. I just I'm infringing on your gimmick.
Easy there, John Cena. All right, let's talk to you later.
You know what? You know what? You know what? You know what?
They Sugar D-I-C, D-A-D-I-E. That's just a title explaining who I be. Mr. L-A-W-N-G-E. I'll take a sucker from any villain injury. Now that I've spelled it out and you like the way it sounds, I'm dissing rap music and whack music all the grounds. You say I'm full of shit, and for that I give a pound. The sugar dick daddy, Mr. Long, to break it down. Ladies, step to me for a real neat treat. And if you don't want to call me Long, you can call me Sweet Meat. I wear protection, you won't catch claps here. Come over later, but first go get a pap smear. 9.5, okay dear? And don't forget clean underwear. Cause I don't want the funk to flow. And after I nut, yo, you gotta go. Don't you know ho? Don't you know ho? Okay, enough is enough. Time to get done off my ladder. And dig deep in the subject matter.